The Early Flood of Forgeries. It almost looked as if Modigliani's work would be forgotten. His wife, who might have publicized his work, killed herself out of despair one day after his death. His daughter, Jeanne, was soon living in Italy with relatives who had no connection whatsoever with the leading art markets in Paris, Berlin, and New York. That left the Paris artists and painter friends and the two dealers who principally represented Modigliani's work. Already in 1914, the art dealer and collector Paul Guillaume, who in the beginning of his career dealt primarily in African tribal art in his small Paris gallery, had entered into an agreement with Modigliani. His gallery quickly became one of the most important places for contemporary art, because the dealer wasn't just interested in making money by selling art. Guillaume also wanted to support the artists he represented. Inter alia, André Durin, Henri Matisse, and Chaim Soutine, financially and morally. On a 1915 portrait of his dealer, Modigliani painted the words Novo Pilota, the new helmsman. It was Guillaume who introduced Modigliani to Constantin Brancusi, the Bulgarian sculptor living in Paris, and encouraged him to make sculpture. Modigliani quickly gave up the attempt, however, because of his bad lungs and the dust set loose by sculpting stone. Later, Guillaume terminated his agreement with Modigliani, and Leopold Zborowski took on the task of finding buyers for his pictures. Modigliani's social circle in Paris was also the same group that became quite active in the miraculous increase in the number of his works. This happened right after his death to bolster his fame and provide financial security for his daughter. That his pictures were copied by his friends for quite a number of years can be explained only by the wretched economic conditions in Paris in the 1910s. It was only after World War II that others devoted themselves with concentrated criminal intent to the lucrative market for work by this deceased painter. A friendly favor. Some art historians believe that the first person to bring dubious Modigliani work into circulation was Leopold Zborowski, the very man who had heartily supported Modigliani during his lifetime. His friend and dealer is supposed to have paid other friends and colleagues of Modigliani to complete his unfinished paintings. Later, he is alleged to have asked them to paint work in the style of Modigliani and sign his name. The French painter, Fernand Léger, who already had gallery representation at this time with Daniel Henry Kahnweiler, recalled in a conversation with the art historian and critic Dorat Valier that the completion and forgery of works by popular painters was a common practice in Paris artist circles during Modigliani's life, and was understandably a good way to earn money. One day a friend said to me, "Do you want to earn some money?" "Of course," I said, "but how?" He became secretive. "I can't tell you." "Come on, tell me." He hesitated. "Okay, listen. I touch up old pictures. Corot. If you want, I can introduce you." 2 days later, he escorted me to a dirty shop. Dirty is hardly the word for it. I don't understand how art lovers can buy pictures in such filth. One could say the more dust there is, the dirtier it is, the more satisfied they are. A little old man received us. He was the owner. He showed me a couple of gloomy landscapes with tiny figures and asked me if I could touch up the figures to make them more pronounced. "It's a picture by Corot that has suffered a lot, but be careful," he told me, as he entrusted it to me. The next day I returned the picture. The figures were nicely in place. He seemed satisfied with me and paid me right away. A few days later, my friend said to me that the dealer wanted to speak to us. "I saw right away that you had talent," he told me. "This time I will entrust you with an assignment that is delicate, but also better paid. Do you see this picture?" It was a similar sort of picture. "You need to add a figure here on the right." This time, something in me rebelled. I took the picture and bolted without saying a word. It kept going around in my head. Early the next day, I went back to the dealer. He didn't expect me. He came out of the back room quite surprised, and all at once I understood everything. An awful smell of burned oil filled the shop. There was no longer any doubt. Here, pictures were forged, and he was in the middle of roasting a painting on the gas stove to give the paints a patina. You might have told me they were forgeries. What? Huh? He seemed flabbergasted. You're not cooking mutton. I was enraged. He didn't have any excuses left. He explained that his colleague fabricated the Corot landscapes, but wasn't talented enough to paint the figures. He offered me 8 francs a day to make Corots for him. And so I made 25, maybe 30 fake Corots. Perhaps they're still around today. I haven't seen them since, in any case. To the contrary, in America I did once again see the fake Modiglianis that my colleagues made. I had to judge earlier whether these forgeries were well made, and I must say they were very well made. My colleagues borrowed a picture from Modigliani to study it, as they said, and when they had it back, in their atelier, they made a copy. When they were done with the copy, they put the copy next to the original and called me in. I could look as carefully as I wanted, but I couldn't tell which was forged and which was genuine. So I told them, "Listen, you need to put something in, a sign, so that one can tell the difference." And they made a mark with pencil on the frame of the forgery. I encountered this pencil mark again in America. That's how life was. A New Beginning After the War. Back then, of course, forgeries were made only of work by artists for whom a market existed. Just as Léger's friend recollected borrowing works from Modigliani's atelier in order to copy them and sell them for a fee, such practices were hardly failures, despite what many biographies after his death contend. Leopold Zborowski acquired from Modigliani's estate all the sketches, drawings, sculptures, and paintings of his that were to be found. This gave him a monopoly on an artist whose fame skyrocketed. In the winter of 1922-23, the American pharmaceutical millionaire Albert C. Barnes came to Paris on a buying trip for his private museum in Marion Station, near Philadelphia. In addition to 52 works by Chaim Soutin, he acquired 16 Modigliani paintings. Even today, they constitute the largest single public collection of Modigliani paintings on display anywhere in the world. Not least because of this spectacular purchase, which quickly became known, the prices for Modigliani's works rose dramatically, and Leopold Zborowski became a wealthy man. The art dealer had not long, however, to enjoy his riches. He lost almost his entire fortune in the world economic crash of 1929. When Zborowski died in Paris in 1932, also young, at just 43 years old, he was buried in a pauper's grave. The Second World War disrupted all further sales. In Germany and occupied France, Modigliani was officially considered to be contrary to the Nazi ideals of art. A commission seized and removed from the Berlin National Gallery one of his loveliest portraits, a painting of his wife, Jeanne Hébertin. The German government auctioned it, along with 124 other paintings and sculptures, at the Galerie Fischer in Lucerne on June 30, 1939, 8 weeks before the beginning of the Second World War. All the works offered had been seized from German museums. A self-portrait by Van Gogh, dedicated to Gauguin, got the highest price, at 175,000 Swiss francs. Lawrence Lehr, a cellist from Bern, bought the Modigliani portrait for 6,600 Swiss francs. For the international public in attendance, the two artists were thereby enshrined as the most valuable painters of classic modernism. When the international art business picked up again after the war, Modigliani held on to his place at the top of the artists most in demand. One of his nudes had already been gaveled out for 1 million francs at an auction in Paris in 1952. A 1957 book, republublicizing the mythology of the artist, which was so helpful for sales, appeared within a few years in French, Italian, and German. In this little book, the French poet and critic André Salmon recorded his memories of Modigliani and added letters and poems. His text had already appeared in 1939 in the Paris magazine Les Ouvres Libres. Now he brought in the great tradition of the School of Paris, and with all due pathos, elevated Modigliani once again to be its uncrowned king. The high prices being paid for Modigliani after the war naturally awoke the appetites of forgers, especially since it seemed that the stylized portraits of faces with long necks and noses, small mouths, and mostly empty eye sockets, as well as the characteristic signature, could be easily imitated. The Hungarian painter Elmir de Hori was one of the most famous Modigliani forgers in the immediate post-war period. His life story, set forth in a book by the American journalist Clifford Irving, and later filmed by Orson Welles under the title F for Fake, can be enjoyed with a certain amount of caution. As his life is recounted in that book, de Hori, the scion of an Austro-Hungarian diplomat and a banker's daughter, studied classical painting in Budapest, Munich, and Paris, with Fernand Léger, among others. Because of his associations with a spy, he was incarcerated, put in a concentration camp by the Nazis, and later deported to a Berlin prison hospital, from which he was able to escape and flee to France. When he allegedly sold his first copy of a Picasso painting, the 40-year-old discovered that he could live much better by forgery than he could by selling his own work. Elmir de Hori, alias Louis Cassou, Joseph Dory, Joseph Dory Boutin, Elmir Herzog, Elmir Hoffman, and E. Reynal, settled in the U.S. 1 year later and in Miami began a business forging works of classic modernism, often Modigliani pictures, which were much sought after by American collectors after the war. Elmir de Hori worked with respected dealers such as Jacques Chamberlain and, of course, Fernand Le Gros, who knew, according to his own statements, that they were dealing in inauthentic work. Everybody in the art world had heard some of the countless legends about Modigliani, the peintre maudit, and those stories made it easy for de Hori and the Modigliani forgers that came after him. They furnished excellent arguments as to why, once again, somewhere in the world, a new work was discovered that had never been seen before or shown at any exhibition. Modigliani's irregular life, his liking for hashish and alcohol, and his frequent change of abode were the reasons he didn't keep an inventory of his produced work. After he died, there was no record of the works that had left the studio. And his companion, Jean Eboutern, who could have distinguished the genuine from the fake through observation, took this knowledge with her into the grave 1 day after Modigliani's death. But everyone knew some story about Modigliani being broke and using drawings to pay for a meal, a bottle of wine, a prostitute, or common debts. Or about his generosity toward people he liked. Who would dispute that hundreds of unknown works could be in circulation, just waiting to be presented to the surprised public? One wanted to believe that anything was possible for Modigliani, this genius who was misunderstood while alive. Moreover, Modigliani's daughter had grown up, returned to France at the age of 19, and held to the lingering superstition, common among artists, widows, and children, that the artist's family could best decide which works were authentic and which were not. As with assorted models of Modigliani, she gave expert opinions about her father's work, at the time of whose death she was exactly 14 months old, and she was often wrong. Jean was impossible, confirmed the Geneva art dealer Marc Blondeau, because she signed certificates of authenticity on a very subjective basis, without serious research. She even authorized people to reproduce her father's sculptures in bronze, despite the fact that he only worked in stone. Serious art historical research regarded Modigliani's work for some time as crowd-pleasing art that wasn't worth much consideration. What authority is needed other than one's own belief as to the authenticity of the work on the wall of one's living room? The Battle of the Experts. The lack of a reliable list of his works caused severe damage to Modigliani's reputation. In 1929, the art historian Arthur Pfannstiel attempted the first catalogue raisonné of Modigliani's paintings, and in 1958 there followed a second volume for the drawings. Both are considered to be unreliable. Pfannstiel didn't have the financial resources or logistical capabilities to see the approximately 350 original works of art in person, or to provide images for many of them in the catalogues. Moreover, not only was he involved in a 1929 scandal in Berlin in which 30 fake Van Goghs were offered for sale, but after the war he was among those experts who certified the forgeries of Elmire de Horry as genuine, and was paid to do so by Galerie Le Gros. Amadeo Modigliani, Peintre, by Ambrogio Ceroni, appeared in 1958 and remains the foundational work to this day. In that book, and in the new edition of 1970, the Italian author, who was chiefly a banker, listed in total 337 oil paintings. But Ceroni was prepared to identify as authentic only those works that he had seen in person. Whatever existed outside Europe at the time his book appeared was not within his reach, since Ceroni never traveled, for example, to the U.S. Thus, Ceroni does not list The Girl with Blue Eyes, which belongs to the Marion Kugler McNay Art Museum in San Antonio, Texas, is doubtless authentic, and has been shown in many exhibitions. Transaction records belonging to Modigliani's first gallerist, Paul Guillaume, were not yet available. These records have since been used to construct the provenance of many works. Ceroni often listed only the current location where he had seen the work, without tracing the provenance back to the painter's studio. Nonetheless, respected auction houses and gallerists rely on his book to this day. The London art dealer, James Roundell, confirmed just a few years ago, "If a painting isn't in Ceroni's index or doesn't have a proven old provenance, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole." The German critic, Josef Lantemann, counted 1,024 authentic works in 1970, among them 420 paintings, and was very much in demand as an expert until a quite advanced age, continuing to provide his expert opinions of authenticity into the 1980s, though they are considered controversial today. In his book, he cited neither provenance nor current ownership, nor any indication of where the works had already been exhibited or at least reproduced. Therefore, his publication was considered unreliable immediately after it appeared. The Milan art historian Osvaldo Patani finally published his list of works in 1991, including 349 paintings. Then, in the following year, Patani published a second list of the drawings. And in 1994, he published an index, claiming academic rigor and including the information missing from Lantemann's catalog, which, to the surprise of many, demonstrated that legitimate Modiglianis could still be discovered. Discoveries are possible. In 1993, an entire collection surfaced of hundreds of works, mostly on paper, that hardly anyone had known about. They had belonged originally to a Paris doctor named Paul Alexandre, who had started assembling the collection in 1907. Some of these works were already in circulation during the collector's lifetime. Today, they decorate the walls of wealthy art lovers and the drawing collections of famous museums, and they bestowed on Alexandre a comfortable retirement and gave his family a rich inheritance. Perhaps because his goddaughter, Hélène Perrone-Katzen, liked it so much, Paul Alexandre gave the child a charcoal drawing before the war. The 43-by-27-centimeter, unsigned, portrait-format work shows an Egyptian-style female nude, with a cat sitting in the foreground. Hélène parted with the work on paper at a Sotheby's auction in New York, where it sold for around $250,000. The once unknown Paris painter in Montmartre, whose pictures Paul Alexandre liked so much that he even had his own portrait painted by the artist, was henceforth Amadeo Modigliani, art market star. Between 1907 and 1914, Paul Alexandre collected 500 Modigliani drawings and a considerable number of paintings, and considered Amadeo a friend. Then Alexandre was called to military duty, and it appears he never saw Modigliani again. The art-inclined dermatologist spoke in his memoir about the years before the war. "I have almost all his paintings and drawings from this period." This assertion is not inaccurate. Though Alexandre helped the painter find a studio on the Rue Delta and begged him not to destroy paintings and drawings or give them away for hashish or a glass of absinthe, because Alexandre was willing to purchase them for his collection, some major works from his early period were handled by his dealer, Paul Guillaume, and made their way into other collections. Paul Alexandre had planned to publish his collection in a demythologizing book on Modigliani. Osvaldo Patani took on this assignment as the final part of his lists of works, and had also planned a fourth volume. Patani, however, distanced himself from the project in 1999, giving two reasons for the decision. Speaking to the London publication Art newspaper, he said, "I am disappointed, demoralized, and also annoyed. I am an honest man, and nowadays I have to reckon with too many vested interests and too many fakes in circulation." In particular, Patani continued, lawyers for the Wildenstein Institute in Paris had threatened him in writing with legal action if he disputed any attribution in the forthcoming Wildenstein Modigliani catalog. Battle of the Giants. At the turn of the millennium 20 years ago, two book projects were competing to be considered the definitive list of Modigliani works, and the authors are engaged in a public dispute over who is the rightful guardian of the Modigliani legacy. Legally, the authority is quite clear under French law. Christian Parizeau, a lecturer at the Institut d'Art Visuel d'Orléans for 20 years, got to know Jean Modigliani during research for his PhD dissertation. They got along well, and the artist's daughter granted him droit moral pursuant to her will at the time of her death in 1984. In France, according to droit moral, only the heir of an artist or the persons they appoint have the right to have guardianship of an oeuvre and to decide its authenticity. Because, as a rule, the holders of such rights are paid by collectors for their expert opinions, the droit moral can be a lucrative source of income. Parizeau took over control of Jean Modigliani's private effects from her father, particularly postcards and letters, and published several dozen books and catalogs. He oversaw scores of exhibitions throughout the world. He founded the Archive Légale Amadeo Modigliani to do his work. It has moved around several times, but since October 2007 has been situated in a palazzo in Rome. Parizeau started publishing his own indexes of Modigliani works. According to his statements, Parizeau acquired the archives of Ambrogio Ceroni, Josef Lantamann, Osvaldo Patani, and Artur Pfannstiel. In spring 2001, he founded a Modigliani committee, to which he belongs, along with, among others, Jean Kiesling, who is the son of Modigliani's painter friend, Moise Kiesling, and the author of Kiesling's Catalogue Raisonné. His own father is suspected, with good reason, of forging Modigliani works under commission from, and with a fee paid by, Leopold Zborowski in Paris in the 1910s. Jean Kiesling admitted later that, if Parizeau requested it, he sometimes signified certificates of authenticity for Modigliani works even when he hadn't had the chance to see them. At the beginning of 2007, Kiesling became a ward of the state because of the deterioration of his mental health. A new Modigliani catalogue raisonné is supposed to be in the works under Parizeau's aegis. Among experts, the project is regarded with great skepticism. Daniel Malanga, doyen of the Paris art trade, announced shortly after the nomination of Parizeau's Modigliani committee, "This committee is a total joke. Parizeau went fishing and found people that all the world can see don't know enough about Modigliani to say what is correct. No one will take their catalogue seriously." Marc Blondeau in Geneva shared the opinion, "It's nonsense for me. It's a non-event." Knowledge and Science. It wasn't the first time that Parizeau, the industrious guardian of the estate, garnered attention by publicly presenting in print and in exhibitions new Modigliani works whose authenticity was disputed by experts that he had excommunicated. In Spain in 2002, the police closed an exhibition organized by Parizeau and seized 77 drawings shown in it. The work supposedly came from Modigliani's lover, Jean Hébuterne. Earlier in fall 2000, Parizeau persuaded Luc Prunet, an attorney and the grandson of Hébuterne's deceased brother André, to lend work for an exhibition at the prestigious Fondazione Giorgio Cini in Paris. Under the title Modigliani and His Own, the exhibition included, along with Modigliani, some other artists from his circle. Jean Hébuterne herself was one of the artists in the exhibit. There was evidently a disagreement between Parizeau and Prunet at the end of the exhibition, which caused Hébuterne's heir to refuse his permission for the exhibition to travel to other Spanish cities. When the tour went ahead anyway, Prunet suspected that forgeries were being exhibited, since the originals, which he owned, were no longer available. The police seized 77 of the works in the exhibition, and Christian Parizeau became entangled in a web of massive contradictions, according to the American magazine Art News. First, he claimed that the newly exhibited drawings came from two albums that he had found at the Paris art deal Paradis. When the dealer denied selling the questionable drawings, Parizeau made a new declaration and claimed this time that the dealer was named Guy Pellet, who confirmed the new story. Meanwhile, by the end of 2004, independent experts had determined through material analysis and stylistic criticism that the 77 works were undoubtedly forgeries. Under new questioning by the police, Parizeau changed his story again, according to Art News, and claimed that he had bought one of the two albums not from Pellet, but from another second-hand dealer whose name he could no longer remember. An exhibition that Parizeau organized in Venice in 2006 included works whose authenticity was suspect. In fall 2007, Parizeau surprised the art world by announcing at a press conference in Belgrade that a previously unknown Modigliani painting had been found there. The portrait of a young man with light wavy hair, supposedly from 1918, was alleged to belong to a Serbian no longer living in his homeland. Supposedly, it had taken 17 years to confirm the authenticity of the picture. As confirmation, it was asserted, the hairstyle of the young man suggested that he belonged to musical or literary circles, and that the paint is so thinly applied could be explained by the fact that Modigliani always had very little money. It was not explained at the press conference how, when, or where the Serbian owner had acquired the painting shortly after the opening of the Eastern Bloc. Even a highly respected state-financed institution, the Kunst- und Ausstellungshalle der Bundesrepublik Deutschland in Bonn, got on the wrong horse with the Modigliani retrospective in 2009. The museum director at the time, Christoph Vitali, had long expressed the desire to end his tenure there with a spectacular Modigliani retrospective. He relied on, among other people, Christian Parizeau, despite Parizeau's reputation. Vitali entered into a cooperative agreement with Parizeau as curator of the exhibition in order to obtain the loan of works. The administration of the museum expressed little interest in clarifying when this agreement began or whether Parizeau paid a fee, let alone what the budget was for the exhibition. Just how closely they collaborated may be seen in the fact that both the wall of photographs at the beginning of the exhibition and the printed catalogue displayed the logo of Parizeau's Archive Légale Amadeo Modigliani. At least 19 works in the Bonn show were suspected to be forgeries. Inter alia, the drawings Woman with a Hat, Hong Kong's Borowski, and Victoire. Five early works that are at the very least questionable, and the paintings Young Brunette, Maria, Red Caryatid, Young Woman with White Collar, Reclining Nude, Celine Howard, and Young Woman with Brown Hair, Elvira. Had those responsible for the exhibition done their research, they would have found that this wasn't the first time flags were raised about some of these works, and that to place their trust completely in Parizeau was misguided. According to the catalogue, Modigliani, at age 16, is supposed to have painted the early work in the Bonn exhibition, Medea, as a portrait of a young girlfriend on Sardinia. The portrait in profile was used as advertising for the sale of land at Azienda Modigliani, near Cagliari, and asserted, citing Christian Parizeau, that Modigliani's father had been active as a businessman in Sardinia. In the respected literature on Modigliani, there's no proof of his having been there. In 1900, Modigliani swung between life and death because of a tubercular infection. That his mother would let him travel to Sardinia at that time is just as unlikely as his father doing business there. The half-length portrait called Young Brunette, allegedly dating from 1918, landed on the tens of thousands of printed posters, stickers, and folders that advertised the exhibition, which reproduced images of three doubtful works. It looked strikingly like Modigliani's Seated Woman in Blue Dress of 1917 in the Moderna Museet in Stockholm. The copyist didn't understand the woman's hairstyle in the original, nor did he recognize that her dress wasn't black, perhaps because of a printing error. Nonetheless, the picture was shown in Palermo in 2019 and attributed to Modigliani in the exhibition, from which the Carabinieri seized two other portraits in March of that year. The show had been organized by the Istituto Amadeo Modigliani in Spoleto, with which Parizeau also works. Particularly audacious in the Bonn show was the exhibition of a putative 1918 painting, Young Woman with Brown Hair, Elvira. The catalog asserted that it had been obtained through a gallery in Frankfurt, and just a week after the opening of the exhibition in the Bonn Kunst- und Ausstellungshalle, the astonishingly fresh, unframed picture was offered for sale through advertisements in the Süddeutsche Zeitung and the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. At the moment on view in the Bonn Museum, discreet and professional transaction in Switzerland. In response to inquiries about the classified advertisement, an art dealer in Bruck, near Zurich, sent an offering folder with photocopies principally of expert opinions from the Archive Legal Amadeo Modigliani of Christian Parizeau. Not only had Parizeau certified the genuineness of the painting, but so had Modigliani's daughter Jeanne and her husband, the philosopher Waldemar Nechtschein, who was identified as a Modigliani expert. Parizeau confirmed the authenticity, even though the signature and the way of writing the date were markedly different from each other, in two documents. The cover letter cited the Bonn exhibition itself as proof of the authenticity of the painting, as well as the accompanying catalog and a photocopied article about the show from the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, which had a big reproduction of the painting. The Bonn exhibition served quite openly as a sales pitch for a work for which neither provenance nor prior exhibition history could be provided. The work, which Parizeau had already listed in his index as authentic, was supposed to fetch 4.2 million euros. It's easy to suspect that Elvira had only been put in the show in order to sell it later at a profit. The muddied colors of the half-length portrait Maria that was exhibited in Bonn were atypical for Modigliani, and the strangely flat portrait of Celine Howard, which, along with Maria, would lead to the closing of the Modigliani exhibition in Genoa in 2017, was already shown in Bonn as well. If one were to compare this picture with the authentic reclining nude on a red couch from the Stuttgart Gallery, which was also exhibited in Bonn, several artistic mistakes appear. The face seems as flat as a mask. The shoulder blades and breasts are anatomically incorrect. The body doesn't lie on the pillow but seems to hover over it, and the left thigh is positioned such that it seems to be attached to the stomach rather than the hip. According to material and technical investigation by Marc Restellini, then of the University College London, another reclining nude that Parizeau declared in the fourth volume of his Index of Works, Témoignage, to be genuine, contains titanium white, a paint material that Modigliani could not have used because it was first sold after his death. Parizeau claimed that the values measured were ambiguous, or that the material could have been added later in a layer of varnish. "We tested multiple layers and found traces everywhere," Restellini countered. "It's not the varnish." Parizeau also contends that the reclining nude Celine Howard, which was shown in both Genoa and Bonn, is authentic, although in a rare moment of unity, experts from both Sotheby's and Christie's had previously rejected it as dubious. The picture was the subject of litigation in the U.S. between the dealers Josef Gutmann and Paul Daniel Quattrocchi, who both claimed the right to sell it. Gutmann also supplied at least 11 of the paintings that the police seized in Genoa, according to the police. Meanwhile, the French police has in its custody at minimum three paintings that Parizeau attributed to Modigliani, and whose authenticity has been doubted, to say the least. One of them, Promenade in Livorno, a purported youthful work with only a forged signature as proof, was seized in advance of an auction at the Paris auctioneer Drouot. Guy Pellet, the second-hand dealer who was embroiled in the forged Ebuterne drawings, claimed that this painting had belonged to him too, according to Art News. Pellet said that Parizeau promised to confirm the Modigliani attribution if Pellet in turn backed up Parizeau's story about the discovery of the Ebuterne drawings. Two other paintings, Young Man with a Mustache and Girl with Bangs, were seized from exhibitions in France. The allegations against him were the result of a witch hunt, Christian Parizeau had already told Art News in 2004. He said he would disprove all the accusations in a thorough trial, including the allegations that the Ebuterne drawings shown in Spain were forgeries. The trial was delayed several times because the investigative judge was replaced, then a second one died, and then a third had to work his way into the Modigliani case. Chief responsibility for the current dilemma was already clear, Parizeau said. The police are only doing the bidding of their bosses, Marc Restellini and the Institut Wildenstein. Parizeau was referring to the direct competition for the right to decide the authenticity of Modigliani works, and consequently the lucrative opportunities to provide expert opinions on such works and to organize exhibitions that would lead to sales. Dueling Catalogues. In 1997, in collaboration with the Institut Wildenstein in Paris, Marc Restellini, former artistic director of the state-owned Musée de Luxembourg, 2000-2003, and later the director of the privately financed exhibition space Pinacothèque de Paris, started to put together what was supposed to be the definitive canon of authentic Modigliani paintings and drawings. These efforts were not without controversy. The Institut Wildenstein was supported financially at the time by the gallery dynasty of the same name, one of the most influential art-dealing families in the world. Since the 1930s, the firm has published indexes of work that are put together by in-house expert teams, the so-called committees. At the Institut de la Rue de la Boétie, in the elegant 8th arrondissement, at times, the website of the Institute listed 47 projects regarding individual artists from Boucher and Courbet to Gauguin, Ingres, Manet and Monet, and on to Pizarro, Renoir, Van Dongen, and Zurbaran. Critics have for years feared that the interests of the Galerie Wildenstein influenced the research activities at the Institute. They say that only after Wildenstein has acquired newly surfaced works for a diminished price, because they remain unauthenticated, are the works recognized as genuine. They claim that Wildenstein has almost unlimited power with respect to the artists whose catalogues raisonnés are prepared at the Institute. No one has proven these oft-repeated accusations, however. The patriarch of the firm, Daniel Wildenstein, who is now deceased, told the journalist Stephen Wallace that he did not own any work by Modigliani, nor had he bought or sold any work by Modigliani that Marc Restellini had brought into the list of works. He said to Wallace that the Wildenstein Institute in Paris prepares its lists of works completely independently from the activities of the gallery in New York. He explained that his family supports Restellini and his project, because he had known Ambrogio Cerroni well and saw now how many fake works were publicized and sold as genuine after Modigliani's death. If I had bought all the Modiglianis that were discovered since Cerroni, we would be ruined. Following several scandals about inheritance and taxes in the gallery-owning family, together with the controversy around approximately 30 valuable and presumably stolen paintings in the rooms of the Institute, Wildenstein has since 2016 conducted its work through a joint foundation with the software billionaire, art collector, and museum founder Hasso Plattner. The purpose of the Wildenstein-Plattner Institute is no longer the authentication or appraisal of artworks, but rather the scholarly preparation of work indexes. Marc Restellini parted ways with Wildenstein in 2015 and founded his own Institut Restellini, with offices in Paris, in the toll-free zone in Geneva, and in Dubai. He is also still at work on his own catalogue raisonné of Modigliani. According to his statements, he has access to a portion of the few remaining documents for Modigliani's early sales, such as the archive of Zborowski's business partner, Jonas Natter, and papers from the estate of Roger Dutheu, an important early collector of Modigliani. Restellini has had his own troubles, stemming from his endorsement of an incorrect opinion. The Swiss collector, Edgar Bavarel, who owned two drawings by Modigliani, brought a legal proceeding against Wildenstein in 2000, because Restellini refused to include them in his index. The judges declared one of the works, Young Girl, to be authentic, and directed the experts to include it in their index. A short while later, Restellini announced that he would give up the project of putting together a catalogue of drawings. Restellini's catalogue raisonné of the paintings had run into problems several times, with its initial publication date of 2002 first moved to 2005 to 2006, and then with no definite date given. Shortly after Restellini had started his work, the industrialist Moshe Shaltiel-Gracian from Chicago had the London house Phillips auction his Young Woman with Brown Hair. The estimate was put at between £1.3 million and £1.7 million. Restellini stated that, for his opinion, at the request of Phillips, he sent a fax to London on the letterhead of the Wildenstein Institute the morning of the auction. I hereby confirm that Lot 56 of the sale, Jeune Femme Brune, cannot, by my opinion, have come from the hand of Amadeo Modigliani. This painting will therefore not be included in the forthcoming catalogue raisonné of his works that I am preparing with the Wildenstein Institute. Could you please convey this information to the audience at the moment of the sale? Phillips therefore withdrew the painting from the sale, though, in the Leicester Gallery in London, the Pierre Matisse Gallery in New York, and the Cincinnati Art Museum, it had reputable previous owners, and was also featured in Cerroni's Index of Works. Shaltiel-Gracian brought a complaint against Wildenstein in a New York court, which, however, could determine only that it was not able to decide the authenticity of the painting. When the owner then brought a complaint before a Paris court, Wildenstein was quick to explain that Marc Restellini was a freelancer and was responsible for his own opinions. Other prominent dealers, such as Ernst Beiler in Basel and David Namad in London, were already involved in disputes with Restellini because he would not approve the authenticity of works in their possession. Meanwhile, the website modiglianiproject.org, started by the U.S. art historian Kenneth Wayne, called its first meeting in the fall of 2019 and scheduled the first online publication of works for the fall of the following year. New strategies for forgery. Christian Parizeau says that he knows of at least 130 authentic Modigliani paintings that are not included in Cerroni's catalogue for various reasons, and the total number of works must be estimated, therefore, to be about 460 pictures. Marc Restellini responds that Modigliani completed only 5 or 6 paintings a month, and that he assumes that the number of extant paintings would be between 350 and 360. Restellini thinks that for every authentic painting there are 3 forgeries, and for every genuine drawing there are 9 fakes. It's not merely a matter of fakes that have been in circulation for a long while. New Modigliani copies continue to be painted and offered for sale as originals. A particularly spectacular case came to light in the United States in 2004. The scheme was always the same, recalls the then federal prosecutor David N. Kelly, and it worked extraordinarily well. The New York art dealer Elie Sakai paid cash for genuine works by real masters of classic modernism, buying preferably from Sotheby's or Christie's. In 1990, he bought Marc Chagall's floral still life La Nappe Mauve for $112,000. 3 years later, at the Art Collection, his gallery on Lower Broadway, Sakai sold a masterfully painted copy of the picture for $540,000 to a Japanese colleague from Tokyo. He sent the real painting to an auction at Christie's in London in 1998, where it brought in $340,000 more. 8-year profit, $854,000. The trick of selling a copy and the original with a gap of a few years worked at least 12 times. But starting in spring 2000, Elie Sakai was undone by mistakes that put the FBI on his trail. The dealer had bought an early floral still life by Paul Gauguin at a Sotheby's auction in London in December 1985. He sold a copy of this vase with lilacs through a Tokyo gallerist to a Japanese private dealer. When, after a suitable lapse of time in spring 2000, Sakai wanted to cash in the original, it turned out that the Japanese collector was planning to sell his alleged Gauguin at the same time. That's how it came to be that the same alleged Gauguin painting appeared in a catalog for a Christie's auction in New York on May 8th and popped up in a competing auction at Sotheby's 3 days later. After thorough investigation, Christie's discreetly withdrew its version from sale. It wasn't acknowledged that the work that had been offered was a forgery. Sakai was arrested in New York. Judge Michael H. Dollinger read out the indictment against Sakai, charging him with a dozen counts of fraud. The damages were calculated by the federal prosecutor to be in excess of $20 million. After the arrest of its owner, the gallery's website continued to offer works by Monet, Renoir, and Modigliani that could not be found in the indexes of works for these painters. Residual risk. Today, every exhibition of Modigliani carries with it the risk of ennobling questionable works, since there is no reliable catalogue raisonné. The London art dealer James Rondel calls the situation a nightmare. Roberto Cremoncini, the director of a private London museum, the Esterick Collection of Modern Italian Art, calls the Modigliani problem a giant minefield. And Philip Hook, who for a long time had to decide at Sotheby's what Modigliani works would be offered to its clients, sees the decision as an ethical abyss. Marc Blondeau confirmed that hardly anyone is comfortable giving an opinion on a Modigliani while there's still no definitive list of works that all participants in the art market recognize. I remember getting one of his paintings from an excellent French collection for Sotheby's Paris, but worrying because the provenance went back to Zborowski. I accepted it for sale, but maintained the right to later withdraw it. Then I asked three major dealers for their opinions. None of them would give me a decision. They all asked, "What do the others think?" I pulled it out of the sale at the last minute. Blondeau didn't fare as well with other works. When the scandal about the forger Wolfgang Baltracchi broke in 2010, it seemed that Blondeau, like some of his colleagues, had unknowingly sold several fakes of the German surrealist Max Ernst, sometimes for millions.